Welcome to the Book Nook on WYSO. I'm Vic McCunis, and it's my pleasure to welcome to the program today Dennis Tafoya. He has a new novel out. It's called The Poor Boy's Game, and he joins us by telephone from somewhere, I'm guessing, along the eastern seaboard.
Yes, that's correct, just outside of Philadelphia.
Welcome to the program.
Thanks very much. It's great to be here.
Dennis, recently we had Wallace Strobe on the program, and we were chatting, and I said, Wallace, who are some of the writers that you really admire that are putting out crime novels these days? And he said, you know, I love the work of Dennis Tafoya. And I said, wow, I haven't read his stuff. I got to talk to this guy. I got to read his books. And here you are.
Wallace is a fantastic author and really a kind of a role model for me.
So, Dennis, tell us about this new book.
The new book is The Poor Boy's Game, and it takes place in Philadelphia. I tend to write stories based around the Philadelphia area, and it's about a woman named Franny Mullen who is a federal marshal involved in a questionable shooting. She loses her job and ends up in a position where she has to protect a witness from her own father. Franny's dad is a thug from a corrupt Philly Union, and breaks out of jail, and mayhem ensues.
And Franny comes from a very messed up background, doesn't she?
Yeah, I mean, Franny is a person who grew up around violence in an unstable background. Her mother was, in fact, murdered by her father, and her sister is an alcoholic in recovery. She's a person who is trying to define herself in opposition to the way she grew up, as working in law enforcement, you know, trying to have a sort of stable, normal life, as she would think of it, in very much in contrast to her background.
But this is difficult for her. There's a guy who is kind of her boyfriend, yet she doesn't want him to get too close. And this is another person who's come from kind of a messed up background. In fact, he's a former criminal.
Yeah, I think that's one of the things I really love to think about, love to write about, is the ways in which we both embrace, sometimes unconsciously or reluctantly, where we came from, our background, and try to escape it, of course. And Franny tries to convince herself that she has defined herself in opposition to all of that chaos in her early life, but clearly drawn to it in other people, and it has profound continuing effects for her, as it does for her sister and the rest of her family.
Dennis Tafoya joins us. His new novel is The Poor Boy's Game. Why is that so important to you to portray people dealing with those kinds of situations?
I think at some level, I'm kind of only interested in family, I think. Certainly, it's what I return to over and over again. I think the fundamental question of who we are, is who we are defined by our will and our movement through the world, or, you know, our family of origin, our personality, the sort of inescapable things versus how we would like to see ourselves, I think, as creating our reality the way we want it. And I think everybody falls somewhere along that spectrum, both in terms of how much we create our own lives and also how much we're aware of whether we've inherited or, you know, been taught a way of being, or whether we really do think and consider and act out of, you know, sort of unmitigated free will, you know?
Mm. Franny's father, Patrick, was an enforcer for this union, and it was a roofing union, and they basically were getting kickbacks from all the roofing jobs in their area in Philly. Isn't that how it worked?
Yeah, exactly. It's based on some real Philadelphia history. And, you know, the other thing I really love, I love to write about Philadelphia. I love to learn more about the city and, you know, put more out about it, not just this kind of interesting, I think fairly little known criminal history, but also you know, the art and culture and the really cool stuff about Philly, too. But in this case, the Roofers Union really was our local 3032 was shut down by the federal government after a while because it was involved with organized crime in the city. And it's a very long and interesting story that isn't generally known in the way that some other Philly kind of organized crime history is known.
Are you old enough to remember Frank Rizzo?
Oh, yeah, sure, absolutely. Yep, he was mayor when I was young and a real kind of towering figure. And this stuff kind of goes back to those days and really like the 80s, you know. So I kind of grabbed stuff that was a little bit older and updated it, you know, kind of changed the story to my suit my purposes. But it's, you know, it's all in the real history of the city.
Well, I was trying to get the time frame on this because they're using cell phones, which seem pretty modern, but there was also a reference to a President Bush, and I wasn't sure if they were talking about that in the past tense or in the current tense.
Well, when I started writing the book, it is kind of pulls from days gone by and updates it to the present. So it is supposed to be pretty much the present tense, give or take a few years.
When Frank Rizzo was mayor, that was a very polarizing situation in Philadelphia. Before that, wasn't he the police commissioner?
Yeah, he was police commissioner and was a real hardcore kind of guy who liked to project an image of sternness. I think his campaign slogan was firm but fair, though my friends always used to say fat but frank.
When we look at the situation that recently went down in Boston where they were prosecuting a fairly corrupt situation with dirty cops, the Whitey Bulger trial.
Right.
We get some echoes of that in your book. There seems to always be a cop on the take somewhere in there, and this makes these stories a lot more interesting.
Yeah, I think, once again, another thing I'm kind of fascinated by is people, and it's. I think it's not always, you know, that kind of direct relationship. Somebody's getting paid, you know, to do something wrong. With the police, it can be very subtle. In my second novel, Wolves of Fairmount Park, I have a character who's a police detective who realizes only very late in the game that he's been fed information for years from an informant with an agenda. And I think that kind of subtlety is sometimes at play, and the ways in which I think somebody in that role thinks they're manipulating the situation. The police officer thinks they're in control of things and they're doing good work. They're just doing it with the help of bad guys. So I find that interesting and kind of use that Whitey Bulger paradigm, you know, that approach in both novels a little bit.
Dennis Tafoya joins us. His latest is The Poor Boy's Game. You mentioned that you're really writing about families in these stories. And in this one, we've got families of various ethnic distraction. There are the Italians, the Germans, and the Irish. And at one point, there's some conversation about the old neighborhood and how it used to be Irish, but now the only...
Yeah, now it's kind of polyglot. And I think Philly is one of those towns. I think Boston is one of those towns. You know, there are a lot of those places in the Northeast that used to look and feel a certain way, and they don't anymore. And it's dislocating for the older folks, the folks who remember the city as it was. Philadelphia experienced a number of different waves of emigration out of the city, you know, from the white families of Frankfurt and Kensington and those areas. Many of them left. They went north up to Ben Salem or out to Jersey. And I think, you know, for guys of that generation in that segment you're talking about, this is an old Irish gangster, you know, looking at the city, it's, you know, it's, dislocating. He doesn't know the new world. It's good news for the city in a lot of ways because Philadelphia, I think, stays a really interesting and dynamic place because we get waves of new people coming in, young folks moving into the city, different ethnic populations, and I think it keeps us dynamic and offers a lot of cool stuff. But for somebody of that generation, all change is bad change, you know?
Franny believes a lot of things about her father that make her hate him, and yet somehow he would have been proud of her because he's a guy who took pride in being able to deliver that knockout punch, and here she's gone on and become a fighter in her own right. She's a pugilist.
Yeah, I it was something I found really interesting, and it was funny because I started writing the book with this idea that he had been pulled out of the boxing world to become a leg breaker for the union, and that Franny, once again, in spite of herself, was drawn to that world and had done some boxing herself. And I was kind of thrown. I found out that in real life, actually, the guys that I was, whose story I was fictionalizing, the Roofers Union guys, actually were boxing coaches and well-respected boxing coaches who did exactly what I had sort of stumbled on fictionally. They were really doing it. If you go to websites that deal with Philly boxing history, you'll see pictures of some of the guys who were involved in the Roofers Union scandals, which is kind of a wild thing that a guy named Greg Gillespie, who owns Port Richmond Books, a lot of this story is set around Port Richmond, and Greg is just a fantastic guy who knows a lot of this kind of history and helped me a lot understand all that.
I think the thing that really keeps the story moving is the fact that we've got all these shadowy bad guys out there trying to track down various people, and just about every time someone walks out on the street, a suspicious vehicle goes by, or there's someone waiting in the shadows, and it just really keeps the adrenaline flowing.
I'm glad to hear that. certainly trying to create an atmosphere of menace and, very much this constant threat from unknown directions. A lot of the book basically is about Franny just trying to understand the peril that she's in, and sometimes incorrectly. She makes some wrong assumptions, but she is constantly under threat. Her whole family is, but it's not always clear the direction that it's coming from.
This is pretty dark stuff. When you got into this, how did this happen? How did you decide you wanted to write novels like this?
I think I've always been fascinated by crime. I still read a lot of true crime. I think I'm fascinated by the way things go wrong for people and who the people are who end up in the sort of extreme, desperate circumstances. I think I'm drawn to writing about a kind of desperation. And, when I was a kid, I told this story, many times in interviews, I worked in a hospital and an emergency room, and there was a fire in a meth lab in our area in those days. Biker gangs used to rent farmhouses and cook in them and then abandon them. And once in a while, they'd burn, as meth labs do. And we got calls at the emergency room all night long from somebody trying to take care of somebody who'd been severely burned. That stuck with me a really long time, and always asking myself, who ends up in a burning meth lab in the middle of the night? Who is that person? I love writers like Elmore Leonard who have a kind of fun, cool approach to crime. But when I look at these things, I see desperate people making terrible mistakes, mostly. And when you're exposed to violence like that, I see it as kind of destructive of who you are. Ultimately, it just wears you down and changes your kind of chemistry. So while I love Elmore Leonard, and he taught me a lot about how to write by reading his books, I come out at a very different place. When I think that experience changes you.
Dennis Tafoya joins us. His new novel is The Poor Boy's Game. We really feel for Franny. Franny is messed up, but her heart's in the right place, and she's your protagonist, and you're a guy, and she's a woman. how was it for you to write a story from a woman's perspective? How difficult was that?
No, I worried about it a lot. I worried, and that was my first question to my beta readers, who were women, to say, you know, is this authentically a woman? As Wallace says, Wallace Strobe writes about a character, Chrissa Stone, who's, you know, fantastic, fully realized character. We're both concerned about, you know, we don't want to write a guy in a dress. We want to write somebody that feels like a woman acting the way, an authentic, natural way. And it took a lot of reading and a lot of research, as all my stuff does. But then ultimately you feel like you pull it into yourself and you can talk in that voice and move through that world. And then it's up to the readers to say, did I do a good job? Did it work?
Yeah, well, Chrissa Stone's a criminal, and we never worry about Franny going bad on us.
Yeah, she's got a very, you know, very specific view of herself and the place and her place in the world. It is kind of tough to imagine Franny ever sort of going wrong in that way. She might lose control of her temper because she's an angry person, but not making that conscious decision to do the wrong thing.
You also are really good at setting tone. You have this landscape where I think it's October or late in the year, and it's starting to get cold and it's dark, and you occasionally will throw a little umber wash of color on this with just a passing description of how something looks. It really sets the tone. How do you create this stuff? How do you do it?
Ah, geez, that's the alchemy of of writing. Really, I'm very concerned mostly about hoping I don't bog things down with over description. I really enjoy trying to evoke a mood and telling as much of the giving you a sense of the place as succinctly as I can. But hopefully as accurately as I can. I want you to know what's going on. I want you to feel what it's like to be there. But I don't want you to slow down. I don't want to slow the reading experience down. So it's a game going back and forth between keeping the pace moving and giving you a sense of what these streets in Philadelphia are like. I'm a big believer in trying to get it right.
You indicated that you have readers who have an opportunity to look at some of your stuff and give you feedback on it. How do you decide who these people are, and how do you pay attention to them?
Well, the big one is my film agent in L.A., a woman named Brooke Ehrlich, and I think you want folks who accept the premise, but who are going to tell you what you need to hear about whether what you're doing is working. I think that's the touchstone for all of us who do this, you know, for a living, trying to do it seriously. You want people who are going to give you that kind of feedback to say, this is where you get it right, this is where you get it wrong, but who get what you're trying to do and can judge your work on that basis.
You have a film agent. Now, what conclusions should I be drawing from that?
Well, I did option the first two books for film. Nothing's happened, as anyone who's been through that process or watched that process knows. What a friend of mine called "many chips falling" or "many chips flying, no trees falling." You know what I mean? Lots can happen without anything actually coming out the other end. I'm very grateful that people were interested in the novels and would like to see them on screen, which would be amazing. But that's a long, very complex process that seldom actually yields, a film to go watch with your friends.
But it's pretty neat, though, to have an option, though, because doesn't that mean they pay you whether they make a movie or not?
Yeah. Not a lot of money, but yes, absolutely. It is a really cool thing. And just to think about it, to have somebody seriously ask you the question, who do you see in these roles? That's a lot of fun, you know?
So who do you see as Franny?
I think this would be great for somebody like Rooney Mara.
Dragon Tattoo.
Yeah, exactly. Uh-huh. The Dragon Tattoo. Somebody who can put across, I think, a tough edge. Jessica Chastain. I think of red-haired people because Franny's red-haired, but of course that's just a question of dye, you know, maybe. But, you know, somebody who's got a real authentic, formidable presence, I think, is what you're looking for there.
And Franny looks like her mother, doesn't she?
Yeah. I think that's part of it, too, is, you know, the relationship between Franny and her sister May and her mom Nora, who was, like I said, had been murdered by her father, how much they're like their parents is a constant obsession, especially for May, Franny's sister.
Dennis Tafoya joins us. His new novel is The Poor Boy's Game. Okay, they are optioning some of your books. Maybe they'll end up on the big screen someday. But how did you actually get to the point where you were able to sell books? How did you get a book deal?
I was phenomenally lucky. Basically, I had some stuff out in the world on the internet, some short stories, and a woman who's a screenwriter and a producer in L.A. saw the stories and asked me if I had a novel. At that point, I had two-thirds of Dope Thief, my first novel, so I quickly finished it. And then she steered me to a woman who's a developmental editor, somebody I could work with to sort of polish that to publication quality. And then based on that, my film agent agreed to represent me and found me a literary agent in New York. And that whole process was... sometimes embarrassed by how easy that was for me. Other folks really helped me. But then I think my career, as many careers are in this world, very much defined by help, you know, from the amazing, generous people that you find in this world of publishing.
You mentioned earlier your previous book, The Wolves of Fairmount Park. This book you just mentioned, your first book, what's that about?
A Dope Thief is about a guy who steals money and drugs from dope dealers, and at the same time, he, you know, once out of his life, his father, also a career criminal, he feels like he had been sort of trapped in the life from an early age, and he wishes for something else, even as his criminal life gets more and more dangerous and complex.
You've been reading some Richard Stark, eh?
I read a lot of crime, I mean, that's for sure. Yeah, and there's a lot of great stuff there. I try to read folks who I think can teach me something about how to do this, you know?
So that first book...
Stark would definitely be, you know...
He's a Parker type.
Yeah,
he's
exactly.
A Chris Stone type.
The Westlake books, you know, like I said, Elmore Leonard, Lawrence Block, I think are amazing teachers as well as writers.
Well, we've had Lawrence Block on this program, and he's often cited, along with Elmore Leonard, by guys like you as a big influence.
Oh, absolutely. His book, When the Sacred Gin Mill Closes, was one of those real signals for me. It's such an amazing book, as is the entire Matt Scudder series. The idea of somebody who is an alcoholic in recovery, an alcoholic at the beginning of the series, an alcoholic in recovery at the end, you know, very much points the way to flawed people with difficult histories. But, you know, once again, that stuff moves like a freight train. There isn't a wasted word. The books are beautiful and fast, just amazing.
Well, there seems to be a whole subgenre of great crime writers who used to be heavy drinkers.
Yeah, well, certainly the characters, anyway. You know, I think I don't want to talk about necessarily which of my friends is drinking too much, but certainly there's a real association with the kind of fractured, you know, lives of alcoholics and drug addicts and things like that, who are also protagonists, you know, who also have a claim on your sympathy enough to follow them through these difficult, dangerous stories.
Well, I guess I think of somebody like James Lee Burke, who has this character who is always thinking about having a drink, but then he goes to an AA meeting.
Very much like the Matt Scudder books in that respect. Yeah, I mean, I think the best characters are not flawless characters. They're people who stretch or test your ability to stay with them and identify with them, have a claim on your sympathy while they, fight the evil forces that they encounter.
And Franny feels naked if she doesn't have at least one gun.
Yes. Yeah, very much so. I mean, once again, going into law enforcement is a way to sever, in her mind, her connection to her past. But yes, gives her an identity and a sense of security and a reason to be armed all the time, right?
Uh-huh. And if the holster is gone or there's nothing in it, she's always putting her hand down there like, oh, what am I going to do?
Yeah, exactly. So clearly this is somebody that the reader gets to see has issues that they are not themselves aware of, which I like that kind of thing. I respond to it when I read it, and I find it really interesting to write about, so that the reader is getting an insight into the character that the character does not have about themselves, you know?
Dennis Tafoya joins us. His new novel is The Poor Boy's Game. And are you working on another one?
I'm pulling together the next one, another Franny story, very much in early stages. But that's the plan.
So this could become a series.
That's the hope, and I guess we'll see how this one does and try and get the next one ready to go.
So they've all been standalone so far, but this particular one, you're thinking maybe there's more to the story.
Yes, yeah, and my publisher, Minotaur, who've been incredibly supportive, are interested in creating a series character. So that's why things play out as they do to a certain degree in the book, without giving anything away, that give you some open-ended possibilities.
Well, this one has some fun little twists in it, and as we're reading, we're kind of expecting you to throw us a curve. And at one point, very shockingly, she sees someone and she's like, oh! And, of course, I'm not going to say who she thinks she sees, but she's just like, oh! And you could just feel her heart jump.
Right.
Yeah.
I think that when I first, my first book, Dope Thief, was a novel about a criminal's life, basically. The second one was a mystery. This has the elements of mystery in it now. There is definitely stories to be revealed. And that's the most daunting part of it, to be sure, is keeping the twists coming. I sometimes think, I don't know how I'd ever promise to deliver a mystery to me, because I've always had such incredible respect for the form, and a little fear about whether I could create plots that were twisty and convoluted enough to hold your interest without being so, baroque and involved that they were impossible to follow. So that's definitely what I'm hoping. I'm hoping that people will be shocked by the revelations and find it all interesting and just twisty enough,
Dennis, it's been a real pleasure to have you on the program.
Thanks very much, Vic. It was great to be here.
You've been listening to The Book Nook. Our guest today has been Dennis Tafoya. His new novel is The Poor Boy's Game. For The Book Nook, I'm Vic McKeonis. Thanks for listening. Next week on the program, lexicographer Paul Dixon returns. His new book is called Authorisms, Words Wrought by Writers. That's Paul Dixon. We'll be talking about words in the Book Nook right here on WYSO. The Book Nook is recorded at Soundspace in Yellow Springs and engineered by Chris Hertzler.